Hello and welcome to the Yesterday's News Christmas Special, a festive edition of the podcast that brings you the biggest stories from this week in history. I'm Joe Forrester and I'll be guiding you through the historical headlines from the earth-shattering to the absurd. And my guest this week is presenter, writer and broadcaster Yasmin Khan. You can follow the show at Very Old News and please do get involved. No tweet is too trivial for our attention. On with the show. First up, we're in the New World as a handful of pilgrims begin to build America. Next, we hear the story of how one Victorian writer created the modern Christmas. And finally, sticking with our festive theme, we hear the grisly tale of one of history's most prolific and depraved serial killers. It's the 18th of December 1620 and you join us live from Plymouth Harbour, Massachusetts, where the Mayflower has just landed on the wild and windy coast of an untamed new world. Yasmin Khan is with one of the settlers, Mr. William Bradford.
Mr. Bradford, how do you feel after surviving your perilous voyage?
Well, Yasmin, I'm delighted to finally be here and away from the religious persecution and hardship of Europe. I foresee absolutely no conflict on this fine new continent.
What about the locals? What kind of a relationship do you envisage having with them?
We'll do our best to get on with this country's indigenous peoples. And if all doesn't go to plan, well, people get sick and die out all the time, don't they?
Right. And will this be a colony founded on tolerance, equality and freedom?
Well, yes, of course. Apart from blacks, natives, women and other religious dominations, obviously.
Obviously. Back to you, Joe.
Thanks, Yasmin. That's right, the 102 settlers who landed at Plymouth Harbour were the advance party of the people and culture that would populate modern-day America. Fleeing religious persecution in England, these Puritans were given the name Pilgrims, from the Latin for foreign, by one passenger, William Bradford, who would later become the first governor of their colony. They lived under the revolutionary Mayflower Compact, which was an agreement to government by common consent. However, the proposal wasn't that pioneering, as it was only signed by men. The scouting group sent ashore found an area abandoned by a local Native American tribe who'd been forced to move as their numbers were destroyed by diseases spread from other European visitors, and the settlers themselves barely survived the harsh winter of 1620-21. By the end of it, 50 of the 102 were dead. However, with the cooperation of local tribes, the Mayflower Pilgrims were able to plant corn and beans, and over the rest of the century, more and more left Europe, fleeing the religious wars that beset the continent, or merely seeking their fortune and to begin a life in the New World. However, with the expansion of the white European presence in North America, the Native Americans died off due to war, starvation, and disease, often spread by Europeans. As it happened with Spanish and Portuguese adventurers in South America, the natives, who were several thousand years behind Europe in terms of cultural and technological development, were swept aside, meaning in large part, the land of the free was founded on good old-fashioned ethnic cleansing. Shh, children. It's the 19th of December, 1843, and it's time for everyone to gather round as we tell how one man made Christmas as we know it.
What happened, Mr. Joe?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, Yasmin. After the death of Christ, no one thought to celebrate the day he was born. In fact, they had no idea when it even was. However, pagans across Europe had celebrated winter festivities of one kind or another for centuries, and these often involved drinking, revelry, and gift giving.
But Mr. Joe, I want to know about Christmas.
Patience, little Yasmin. I'm getting there. Well, by the 17th century, Europeans were celebrating Christmas. But it had become a time of drunken debauchery, not the family-orientated joyous occasion we would recognise today. You see, the working people, who at this time lived mainly in rural areas, downed tools for a two-week period over Christmas. This was for practical reasons, as the ground was just too hard to farm. However, this time had also become a period of heavy drinking, and traditional societal rules broke down somewhat, something the ruling classes didn't like one bit. But one man changed all that in the 19th century.
Who?
Well, Yasmin, it was Charles Dickens. On the 19th of December 1843, A Christmas Carol was published and transformed the winter celebration. Dickens' book was about charity and caring, centering around the miserly Mr. Scrooge and the downtrodden but kind Bob Cratchit and his family. The book was a bestseller, And after this, Christmas became an occasion for family and a time to give gifts, not just to your loved ones, but also to help those less fortunate than yourself. Dickens also introduced the idea of ringing church bells, carol singing, mulled wine, holly, Christmas pudding, and even turkey. All these things had featured sporadically, but it was Dickens who made them part and parcel of Christmas. His novel also propagated the idealised version of a white Christmas, something that any Brit will tell you never happens. If you're lucky, you might get a slushy brown one. Once Queen Victoria's husband Albert popularised the Christmas tree from his native Germany, our modern Christmas was very much in place. You see, Dickens' version of Christmas appealed to the Victorian standard of family values, and it's a testament to the cultural influence of his work that it's still how we, and much of the Western world, view Christmas today. So what do you think of that, Yasmin?
Oh, I want my present!
That's the spirit. And finally, it's the 26th of December 1610, and Yasmin Khan is outside Shaythor Castle, where we have news of a gruesome discovery. Yasmin.
Thanks, Joe. That's right, I'm standing at the castle gates with other press and a hushed crowd of onlookers. The mood is eerily subdued. We understand that today Countess Elizabeth Báthory and members of her household were arrested here. However, we're yet to learn the full extent of the charges. Joining me is Count Georgie Thurzo, who was the arresting officer. Count Georgie, can you tell us what the charges against the Countess are, please?
Well, Yasmin, I can confirm that a 50-year-old woman was arrested here today and has been charged with several counts of murder.
How many counts exactly?
80.
I see. What was it you discovered here today?
Well, we've received several tip-offs regarding the residents of Shaythor Castle. And finally, a few days ago, King Matthias himself instructed an investigation of the premises. On entry today, we discovered the accused conducting what appeared to be a torture session in what it seems was a purpose-built dungeon.
Do you believe there could be more victims we don't know about?
Yes. Many more.
Back to you, Joe.
Thanks, Yasmin. Elizabeth Báthory is one of history's bona fide monsters. A genuine sadist who took pleasure in inflicting pain and death on a very personal level. What we today would call a serial killer. Báthory was apparently instructed in Satanism and sadomasochism by some relatives from a young age. However, it was precisely her powerful family that kept her increasingly depraved actions from being punished for so long. She settled in Shaythor Castle in 1560 after marrying Count Nadasdy, who may have indulged her behaviour and even built a torture chamber for her to operate in. However, when he died in 1604, her crimes escalated, and together with her entourage, which included her former nurse and a local witch, she kidnapped, tortured, and murdered local peasant girls. Some of her favourite methods were to jam pins and needles under their fingernails, or smear them with honey and leave them to be attacked by insects. She also bit off and ate parts of her victims, believing human blood would keep her young. She made one girl cook and eat her own flesh. With her family being part of the aristocracy and running much of local and national government, Báthory escaped punishment for decades. However, by 1610, her crimes had become too great to ignore, and when she began murdering the daughters of local nobles, King Matthias of Hungary himself was forced to step in. Báthory and her co-defendants were all found guilty. However, on account of her status, she was the only one not to be executed. Instead, she was confined to a room in her castle with its windows bricked up and slits only for food and air. She survived nearly 4 years and was found dead in August 1614. Elizabeth Báthory was convicted of 80 murders, but the actual number may, in fact, be far higher. The 17th century mind had no concept of a sexual sadist, a serial killer, a psychopath, whatever label you'd like to put on someone like Báthory. However, myths about vampires, werewolves, and other supernatural killers are thought to have sprung from these examples of all too human brutality. People couldn't conceive that a human being was capable of acts such as Báthory's, so particularly brutal crimes were explained away with fairy tale monsters. Well, that was a festive finish. There you have it. With me today to discuss today's stories is broadcaster, journalist, writer, and all-round lovely person, Yasmin Khan. Hello, Yasmin.
Hello.
A bit poorly, Yasmin Khan, today.
Just a little.
Just a little bit.
A little sniffly.
You're drinking a some sort of herbal tea. You were offered a cherry Bakewell tea, which you turned down.
That's just everything that's wrong about modern society.
Isn't it?
Can I just start there?
Broken Britain.
Yeah, Broken Britain is a cherry Bakewell tea.
Yeah.
That's just wrong.
That's horrible. Although, if you did dissolve a cherry Bakewell in hot water, it'd probably be quite nice.
It'd probably be nicer than that. What was in that tea bag.
Yeah, I'm not having it in tea form. That's
no,
very odd.
It's not happening.
So, Yasmin, you're on all sorts of radio stations. Where can people hear you?
At the moment, they can hear me on a Friday on Talk Radio doing Drive Time.
Which I pop into sometimes.
You do?
Yes.
You are one of our regular studio botherers,
yes,
as I call it.
I am. Yeah, repeat offenders.
Yes, we like those. So yeah, 4 till 7 on Talk Radio on a Friday. And then on a Sunday, I'm on BBC Three Counties at 6 p.m. in the evening. And then I pop up in various places, a bit of Radio 4, stuff every now and again, all over the place, really. And when I'm not doing that, I'm writing.
Because you write nice things, don't you?
I write nice things. Yeah, well, you make it sound like I write greeting cards or, you know. I don't write nice things like that. I write other nice things like plays.
Yeah.
Things. Yeah.
So, lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking.
History.
Yeah.
How is your history? You did history at school.
I did history at school. I wish I'd done more.
Okay.
Because as a broadcaster now, I often think, gosh, I should have at least done it to A level because I'm missing out on big chunks of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really enjoyed it. So I wish I had done more. And I've often thought about doing a sort of history night course or something.
Ooh,
like that.
Yeah.
But now that I know that you know so much about it, I think you could just be the teacher. All you're missing, let's go with the stereotype, is the jacket with the leather patches.
I've got one.
See, I knew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got sort of a trendy, updated version, as I like to see it.
No, is that what the people in the shop told you when
yes,
you bought it?
Is. It was really it was much more than I would ever normally pay for a garment as well, but the nice girl in the shop...
Garment. See, you can tell you studied here for a garment.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
I went upon my horse.
Well, I'm on my way.
To purchase some garments.
Oh, I'd love to. I would love to have been alive in, say, the 17th century.
Yeah.
And just shuffle about in a carriage with a nice three-pointed hat and ride about purposefully.
Yeah.
Twixt the manors.
Twixt the manors. With a cape, maybe?
With a cape,
yeah.
Yes. Just, oh, swishing my cape. Oh, I know what to get for Christmas
there
now.
There you go.
Mum, if you're listening, can I have a cape?
Yeah.
Please. Yeah, not the Lego pirate ship.
I think I would have liked to have been a principled highwaywoman.
Okay. What would your principles be?
Taking from other thieves and returning it to people it had been stolen from.
Oh, so like the Dexter of highway robbery?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay, yeah. I can see that. This is an interesting discussion because I always think this. So I often think, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if I had a time machine and say I could go back to the 14th century.
Yeah.
It's amazing in the middle of the Hundred Years' War and the age of chivalry and knights, and it's all very Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah.
Actually, it would be a bit crap because after 10 minutes, you'd be walking around in poo in the streets and everyone would be dirty and they'd stink and you'd have no
and
money
be diseased
and the plague and before you'd get in a nobleman's way and be struck with a gauntlet. Actually, it would be bloody awful.
And you know the other thing, the mobile signal would be rubbish,
awful. Famously no 4G in Plantagenet England. So yeah, that was a problem.
That was an issue.
The Mayflower.
Yes.
I did a very expansive gesture then.
Yes.
The Mayflower.
Well, because it was a big moment.
It was a big moment.
Yeah.
For Americans, not really us. Mm. Because I still, there's a part of me that still thinks that obviously we're talking a century and a bit later. I'm still a bit sore about the loss of America.
What? You look like you take it so personally.
Yeah.
Sore about the, well, it was never ours or anyone's for the taking. That's the whole point.
You touched on quite an interesting point. It was never anybody's to take in the first place. And the history of European expansion in South America and North America tends to be turning up. Do these people have guns? No. Okay, well, we'll just
take it.
We'll kill them then. I mean, the Inca civilization, famously, I think 80 Spaniards defeated an army of 100,000 Incas because they opened fire on them with cannon, which... understandably, the Incas thought was hell itself and completely panicked. And that's basically, and that's my kind of my thing. And I touched on it at the end where I said, it's equality for all apart from black people and gay people and women.
Yeah.
Because America's kind of this country, we're built on principles of freedom. But firstly, quite a lot of early settlers are responsible for genocide. And even now, in the West, I would certainly look to it as a very divided country, wouldn't you?
I At the moment, yes, very much so. Watching it from over here, everything that's happened, obviously. But the few times that I've visited, and I must admit, I haven't been to many places in the US, but I've been to a few, and it just my own personal experience of it is it does feel a lot more, I'd use the word segregated in certain cities. It still feels less integrated than places here. And I know we have our problems here, but I just felt it more there.
I had a guy a few weeks ago who I worked with, a guy called Aaron Roach Bridgman, who's a presenter and a poet, a few weeks ago, and we talked about desegregation. And it wasn't until the end of the 1960s that desegregation was uniform across America.
Yeah.
And that's extraordinary. So lots of people who are still alive today, at school, black people and white people weren't allowed to go to school together.
Yeah.
I think it's scary being an ethnic minority in America now, with Donald Trump. Mexicans being Mexican.
Yeah, no, any minority. And you know, I jokingly said myself on air the other day about, well, who knows after the inauguration, you know, what forms will I have to fill out as a British Asian person of Muslim descent? What will I be, you know, how difficult will it be for me to go there even? Every time I've been, I get pulled aside.
A random search,
yeah. And I remember I was going for business many years ago when before I was doing radio and all of that. I used to work in the city. And the nice gentleman in New York pulled me to one side, went through my bags, and I was tired and I wasn't feeling particularly well. And I thought, I have to keep good humoured because I know the rules, you know, don't speak out of turn. And I had my laptop with me, and I think I was pretty much going straight to a meeting. So I was even in my suit and what have you. And he asked me my name, went through all of that. And I think he asked me where my parents were born.
Right.
And my parents were born in Pakistan. So yeah. I said so. And then he said, and why are you here? And I thought, I could be really arsy about this and say, I'm here for the QPM.
Yeah.
It was a quarterly planning meeting, you know, and then bore him to death with what that was actually about. But where'd you go with that? You know, but that's why I was there.
Well, I suppose there's the temptation, but being British as well, to say, well, I'm here to take over your country, naturally. Step aside.
Except if I had done that, I wouldn't have, my toes wouldn't have touched the ground. Sorry, to go back to the being randomly searched thing. When I was much, much younger, I think I was about 12. So I was born just on the outskirts of Huddersfield in, it's a village, but now I think it calls itself a town of its own, but in Home Firth, which is last of the summer.
God's own country.
Yeah, last of the summer wine country.
Yeah.
And I remember really, even at that age, trying to stifle a laugh because they asked me if, was Home Firth in Pakistan? And I was like, no, it's in West Yorkshire.
Famously, it's near Sheffield, which if you don't know is near Karachi. Yeah
that's so, right.
Yeah.
Just down the road from Lahore, which is just up the road from Bolton.
Oh, God. When they say, you can't say, are you mental, mate?
Yeah.
Think about the question that you're asking me. Well, that's America, so.
Oh, did that? That's done.
That's done. That's done. A Christmas Carol.
Oh, I see.
Now, I said, as we were halfway through recording, this is the part you're born to play.
Yeah.
You played a initially eager, but then ultimately...
Petulant and quite annoyed child.
Petulant and impatient child. You played that with consummate skill.
You just ask any of my producers and they will not be surprised at all.
Oh, this isn't true. Ricky Freelove loves working with you. I know this.
Yeah, he does. He does. He finds himself very fortunate to be working with
him. He does. Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
Were you aware that so much of what we consider to be modern Christmas, so turkey, mulled wine, giving presents, all of that stuff, the idea of snow at Christmas, all of that stuff comes from A Christmas Carol.
Do you know what? First of all, to my shame, I had no idea. But second of all, what struck me in learning this was, my goodness, Dickens was a master marketeer.
Mm.
He was the Cowell of his day.
Yeah.
He invented all of that. If only he'd had a monopoly on creating those products as well.
Yes.
You know, what he did was he created a market for his book.
If he'd have had a turkey farm, he'd have been absolutely laughing.
If he was not only the Simon Cowell, but the Bernard Matthews of his day.
Missed a trick there, Charles.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
Yeah.
I mean, initially what Christmas was, and this is famously the case, was that pagans had a festival of winter solstice, which was on the 25th. And Christians early Christians went, yeah, that sounds good to us. We'll have a festival there. What, the Son of God was born on that day? Yeah, we'll go for that. Yeah. The idea that, and this is well documented, they made it up. No one knew when Jesus was born. So they just went, probably 25th of December, innit? And this is now, I mean, that is a central tenet of Christianity. And no one questions it and goes, Which, what are you talking about? Yeah. A bunch of blokes sitting in Rome just made that up. I mean, I find that extraordinary.
I remember learning at some point when I was growing up that that wasn't the date. And actually, it was, if anything, it was probably more like January the something. Mm. And then there's a whole conversation about where they get that date from. But yeah, I didn't. We are given this as, I was about to say, we're given this as gospel. Yeah.
Yes.
There you Ba-boom. Go. Ba-boom. but you, that's what you're told. And that's what you. You know, this whole thing about tradition, we don't realise how much of it is... The Victorians gave us so much.
Yeah.
Not all of it that we wanted. But you are... It's given to you as this is what Christmas is. And any deviation from that is like, well, no, that's weird. And it's lasted a long time, this current concept of Christmas.
Well, this is it. And because we, obviously, we then spread to America. And America is a former British colony.
You just mentioned that one again.
And they obviously now have the dominant culture in the world. And that's their view of Christmas. And that's how, I mean, Hollywood is the most powerful cultural machine. Mm. That's how
the
people
Western
see Christmas.
The Western view of Christmas, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, but in Europe, they don't do it the same. So, for example, I have a friend who's going to Belgium and I can't bloody believe this.
Go on.
They give their presents on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day they just relax.
What's that about?
He's bloody European.
What's that? What is that? See, this is why.
This is why we Brexited. That's Thank God. That's all I'm saying. Do you know what? I was all for Remain. If I'd have known that...
But they think we're weird because a lot of places don't do... I think we're the only ones that do Boxing Day.
No. Well, do you know what, guys? Extra day off. You're missing a trick there.
Exactly. Although I think some Canadians once asked me what Boxing Day actually was and I had to mumble because I realised I had no idea.
Don't you guys have a day where you just sit in your pants and eat turkey?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cold turkey in Quality Street. What is your problem?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All the Harry Potter films. Lovely.
Yeah, and they were saying, is it because of... The presents, the empty boxes, is that why it's called Boxing Day? And I was like, no, yeah, well...
No, because we organise fights in pub car parks.
Yeah,
that's why.
What it boxed, yeah. Boxing Day, that is an amazing thing. And none of us ever stopped to question what it's for.
Sticking with the festive theme, Elizabeth Báthory.
Wow.
Wow. That I could feel your horror. From across the studio. I mean, what are your reactions to her?
Well, this was a name I knew in passing, but I didn't realise quite the extent of her activities. Is that the way to put it? Okay, so her crimes are shocking, but what's possibly even more shocking is they were kind of allowed to happen.
Yeah. When she was tried on 80 counts of murder, she was the only one who wasn't executed.
Yeah.
Because they went, oh, yeah, okay, she's guilty of these 80 murders. But, I mean, we can't execute her because she's a noble woman.
And it's like, going to look really bad and cause all kinds of problems.
It's like, hang on, I think you've missed the point here.
Yeah.
And this is one of the very funny things. We're talking about America. I mean, America's very much segregated along racial lines. Europe, traditionally, it's been class lines.
Always.
More than anything.
Still is.
That still exists in Britain today as well. But she essentially was allowed for 20-odd years to get away with being an active murderer because she was a noble woman.
And then what did they do? They put her in a bricked up room with slits for food and air. They essentially killed her by vitamin D deficiency.
Yes, exactly.
She must have been quite something because to survive 4 years, I think it was like that. But it's also that phrase of, we sadly hear it a lot now, but in plain sight. People knew what she was doing. Mm-hmm. They knew what she was doing and they just let her carry on.
Well, lots of peasants had been going to the authorities and saying,
you see, they didn't count, did they?
And nobody cared.
But it's when the noble women started, the daughters of noblemen started disappearing, that suddenly it becomes important.
That's it. And then a Lutheran minister went to the king and said, this woman needs to be stopped. She's killing people. And his status, combined with her new victims, who were then nobles as well,
meant that something could happen.
But it's an incredible case of class prejudice. Also a very creepy tale. And what I think interests me is the idea in the medieval or the early modern mind, because they didn't understand the concept of a serial killer.
Yeah.
So that's where the myths of vampires and werewolves come from, because if a particularly gruesome crime would happen, people would believe that it was a supernatural beast who'd done it.
Because they couldn't conceive that a human being would do that.
So this example, so I think it's possibly in Romania where children were being murdered. And that's where the idea of a werewolf comes from.
Oh.
Because they couldn't believe that anybody would do, that a human being was capable of this. So it must be a monster. And like with the myth of Dracula. So he's almost, slightly before, but he's a contemporary of Elizabeth Báthory. And he famously was a what's modern day Romanian nobleman who impaled his victims. that's what he did. So when the Ottomans tried to invade, the army, Ottoman army, essentially ran away terrified because they came upon a field of dead and dying men who'd been impaled. Oh. That's where his reputation comes from. He's called Vlad Dracul, which morphed into Dracula. So combine that with the Elizabeth Báthory myth that she used to drink their blood, and there you've got the vampire. He's the prototypical male for it, and some of her characteristics went into what vampires, in inverted commas, do.
The terrifying thing is some of it is myth, but some of it, with the likes of her...
That's what's more frightening, that people can do these things.
Yeah.
Well, that's Elizabeth Báthory.
Merry Christmas!
I'm going to end on a festive note. Some other nice things that happened... Nice things. I'll look at what I'm about to say. On the 23rd of December, Vincent van Gogh cut off his ear and sent it to a prostitute. Ah, Christmas present. That's nice.
Oh, that's love. That is proper love.
Richard the Lionheart was captured in Vienna. The Wright brothers made their first manned flight. The Boston Tea Party happened. You've already heard my opinions on that. And rather lovely, on 22nd of December 1882, Thomas Edison created the first Christmas lights.
Aww.
Thanks, Thomas.
Was the one that always didn't work right at the start?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, he couldn't find an adapter to plug it
into. That's what it was.
So he's arguing with his wife, yeah.
Took the whole street out.
One of the things I like to, or the thing I like to finish on every week, is idioms. I like words. You're a playwright. I imagine you like words
as well.
It'd be odd if you said, no, not bothered. Crocodile tears. Have you heard the phrase crocodile
tears?
Yes,
so when someone's crying but doesn't really mean it.
Yeah, you mentioned Prime Suspect and Cracker when we were off air. Often the sort of the killer will be caught in that and they'll put on a show of remorse, and it's crocodile tears because they don't actually mean it because they've committed the crime. Yeah. So in the Middle Ages, people believed that if a crocodile found a man by the edge of the water, it would kill him, then weep over what it had done before eating him.
Nice.
So this has become a synonym for being disingenuous. Because if the crocodile was so sad, what'd you eat him for?
Exactly.
So, crocodile tears.
Wow.
There you go. You've learnt something.
I have.
Yasmin, thank you for coming on the Christmas special.
Thank you. This has been great.
Do you feel festive?
Yeah, I am feeling very festive. I just want to forget about Elizabeth Báthory.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a nice memory to take with you into Christmas. Ah. And people can follow you on Twitter, can't they?
They can. It's Yasmin Khan 1 with a number 1 at the end.
Yasmin Khan 1.
Thank
on
you. You
Twitter.
Said that so much better because you don't have a cold.
Yasmin, thank you so much for coming. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Very Old News. Please do get in touch and have a lovely Christmas. You and me got a whole lot of history. There we go. That's Christmassy, isn't it? Oh, genocide and serial killers. Wow. I'm hoot at Christmas. And you broadcast and you can't swear, so I do all my swearing.
You do
it
all here?
Here, yeah.
Bum. Can I say bum?
I say bum copious.
Can you say bum pants?
Yeah.
That's a particularly favourite phrase of mine.
Bum pants?
Bum pants, yeah.
What other kind are there?
It's just a good phrase, that's all. Poo pants is another one.
Lols, bants and wet pants. That's what one of my friends says all the time.
Is that your is that your Tinder bio?
Yeah, lols, bants and wet pants. Get in the van.
There you go,
dude. Okay.
And on that note.
Now we're cooking.
Please don't leave me. No, please don't leave me. Just fine. No, please don't leave me. It's Christmas.